Hello, and welcome to The Dorothy Project, the interview podcast celebrating women's impact on queer culture. My name's Alice Beverton-Palmer. I'm a DJ at ridiculous London club night Push the Button and a huge Drag Race fan, which is why I'm especially excited to be back with an exclusive one-off episode meeting Drag Race's first ever cis woman drag queen, Victoria Scone. Cardiff Queen Victoria is breaking new ground for the show, and also following in the footsteps of her drag mother Tia Coffey, who starred in Drag Race UK Season 2. On the eve of Victoria's historic Drag Race debut, we got together to talk about drag, from her formative memories of pantomime dames to her vision for the future of drag. No big deal then. Thank you so much for making the time to do this. I've been really excited to speak to you, like, as soon as I heard you were doing Drag Race. So, yeah, thanks so much.
Anytime.
So you're doing something groundbreaking, not just for Drag Race UK, but for the whole Drag Race franchise, as the first female drag queen on the show. Mm-hmm. I guess cis female, having had Kylie Sonique Love. But it's been a pretty groundbreaking few seasons for Drag Race, I think, in terms of gender representation, which is really exciting.
Yeah, I think we're heading in a good direction, absolutely.
Yeah. So what does Victoria bring to Drag Race UK? What should we expect?
I've thought long and hard about it, and she probably brings exactly what you see in the local pub down the road. She brings good old traditional British drag. That's what Victoria brings.
What are the inspirations for your drag?
Definitely like old school British drag, really. You know, which is kind of ironic considering, you know, I'm the first of, you know, to be a cis woman on the show, and I'm really doing the same old shit that they're doing like 20 years ago. But yeah, Victoria was brought up by old school drag, but I'm very much inspired by like incredible women divas like Barbra Streisand, Patti LuPone, Donna Summer, Shirley Bassey, those kind of icons. Yes.
Amazing. And in terms of like you and drag, where did the love affair start? Like, what's your first memory of drag as a thing?
My first memory was probably from pantomimes. So I was in them from a very young age. And I would always look up to the pantomime dames or like the evil queen, when I probably should have been looking up to Cinderella or something, but how boring, you know, I wanted to look up to the drag queens and I wanted to be a drag queen. So that's probably where the love affair came from. Yes.
That's the most British origin story I've ever heard. That's amazing.
I was conditioned from a young age.
Yeah. And also, like, something I ask a lot of people is like about their first time in like a queer venue, and often that's where they first encounter drag. Although I would say most people probably did see pantos when they were a kid and maybe didn't even think of it as drag. It's so like embedded in our culture. But what was the first time, because you identify as a lesbian, what was your first time in a queer venue like?
I'm trying to think when it would be. So I trained in like dance and theatre. So the only time I can remember actively going out to like a queer club would be when I was training at that point. And I wouldn't have been out then. I think I may have told a few friends that I felt like I was bisexual, but I came out relatively late as a lesbian. So I'm only 28 now, am I? Yes, I'm 28 now. And I came out when I was 25? Yeah, I think so. So it's relatively late in life. You know, of course, that doesn't mean I'm any less valid or anything like that. But yeah, the first kind of queer memory I have, which is quite funny, is I went to see We Will Rock You with my mum. Actually, probably one before this as well, which I spoke about the other day on Twitter, is Labyrinth. That film made me queer. But I remember going to see We Will Rock You with my mum, and the actress playing Killer Queen was like doing the bows. And when she did a bow, her breast came out. And I remember she like held it back in, looked at me and winked at me. And I went, oh, I'm gay.
That's amazing.
I know. And it was, yeah, I vividly remember that.
I mean, you're not going to forget that.
Nope.
Incredible.
And that labyrinth, I think I saw your tweet about that, and I actually DJed a wedding this summer, and the first dance was Labyrinth soundtrack, and the bride's dress was like Labyrinth inspired. It was incredible, and most of the attendees were queer, so it was a very good day.
Good, yeah.
Yes, indeed. So I feel like there's been this sort of intertwining, and theatre is just completely embedded in everything that you do, really.
It is, yeah. The other way I described it is it Stockholm syndrome, where it's Stockholm syndrome?
Where you're like a hostage.
Yeah, and like you fall in love with your oppressor. Is it that?
Yeah.
Yeah, I feel like that's what theatre has a hold on me like. I can't escape it. I love it so much, but yeah, it's taken over my life.
Is that because did I read that your mum was into theatre and that's kind of what got you started?
Yeah, so she went to the same dance school as me. We were both trained by the same two ladies, Miss Paddy and Miss Susan. Yeah, so we were both trained by them. And that school was actually called Victoria School of Dance. And my name is Victoria, so full circle mum.
Yes.
And my mum was on the Benny Hill show. I don't know if you would have been familiar with it, but yeah, she was a Hill's Angel. I mean, we couldn't have that show on these days because it was wildly misogynistic, but it's good old British humour at the time, you know? We've got to appreciate what it was at the time.
Your first drag performance, was that at the Two Brewers in Clapham?
Was, yes. Yes, for Drag Idol.
Tell me about that. How did that kind of come about? How did that go?
So I think I had started really considering starting drag, and I was looking for a way to get into it, get myself known, get my name out there. And I still to this day will say that the best way to do that is competitions. It's very unlikely, you know, you're going to go jump straight in with a paid gig unless you happen to have a very good relationship with someone that's already working. So yeah, I entered Drag Idol. I think I saw an advert on Instagram, and I did not get through the first round straight away. And I was told, oh, we think you're in the wrong competition. Like you're a female singer, or you know, you should be in the cabaret scene. And I was like, well, I want to be a drag queen, so I'm just going to keep trying. And I tried at Central Station, Admiral Duncan, and I was fortunate enough to make it through all those heats and get to the final. So I persevered. I took on the advice that they gave me, the constructive criticism, not the horrible bit. I didn't go and give up. And I somehow got through to the final of Drag Idol, the first time applying, so that was very fortunate.
And that actually, well, that leads on to like a couple of questions that I had, which was, the first was kind of promoters and event bookers on the scene. Like, how have you found working as a drag queen, and have you had any negative reaction? But the fact that you had to push through your very first experience having that.
Yeah, I mean, that probably set me up for the rest of my career, being told straight away, no. You know, I've had that from the beginning, and I continue to get it now still. So, it probably is definitely more difficult for myself or any non-assigned male at birth drag queen trying to make it in this industry. I love British drag, but it is predominantly white cis men that are ruling the scene. And that is the kind of drag that I love doing, and I appreciate, I respect it so much. But we have such a plethora of diverse drag that people are just missing out on. And I think hopefully me being involved in the show is just going to broaden that spectrum for everyone. And, you know, as I said, I do the same shit they do. So we need to get more people on to show what we can do.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask you, because I'm kind of like, so when I first started watching Drag Race, one of the first things I Googled was, is Michelle Visage a drag queen? And I think, you know, when people see you, they might not know. And I think that's glorious. Like, whether you're, you know, female or male drag queen, like, which makes it even more ridiculous that there's these barriers around booking female drag performers and non-binary drag performers. I went to Pussy Liquor at the Bethnal Green Working Men's Club recently, where the whole bill was female and non-binary performers, and they were all incredible. And it just feels like there's this hurdle of prejudice to get over. What do you think women have to say as drag queens? What can we kind of add?
I mean, we have so much to bring, and there is such an air of misogyny, not just in general, but in the queer community as well. And we need to push through that. I hear all the time, I don't think I'll like it, or I don't think I'll like drag kings. It's like, well, you probably have never actually gone and seen one or seen what they can bring to the table. So, you know, It's just so frustrating. And to try it, you have to literally push it into people's eyeballs and then they'll go, oh, okay. Sometimes people can't tell that I wasn't assigned male at birth. I do a residency in Wales, in Cardiff, every Wednesday. And these two lovely gentlemen, this couple, would come every single Wednesday. And it must have been about 3 months. And then one of them finally came up to me and said, my partner, he just said that you're actually born a woman. That's not true, is it? Like, after 3 months, they still couldn't tell. And then I said, well, yeah, I am actually. So, I'm born a woman. I identify as a woman. He was like, oh, okay. And I realised that it literally does not matter because he has been entertained every week. He's had a lovely time every single week. And it was like penny drop. Oh, well, I guess it doesn't matter then. Yeah.
Yeah. And you kind of mentioned the kind of position of women on the queer scene, and that's something that struck me as well as a queer woman on the scene, you know, whether it's as performers or, you know, in nightlife or activists, like, women are everywhere, but I feel like that isn't necessarily recognized or celebrated. And yeah, it's an interesting one because it's just this impact that isn't necessarily seen in kind of mainstream culture. Mm-hmm. Depiction, I guess, of the scene.
Absolutely. We are not represented enough in mainstream culture, and we're still not represented enough in queer spaces as well, or we are assumed to be a straight person in a queer space, which is the bane of my life. And I think, you know, it's a difficult subject because if I was a straight woman on Drag Race, my drag would still be valid, and I would still be an artist, and I'd still be exactly the same, you know, as much as what's between my legs is as not as important as at all as who is between my legs. That has nothing to do with my art. But I think people assuming that I'm straight because of the word cis, I don't know, they think that cis means straight. Yeah, that's the most sort of comment I've had about my participation on Drag Race, is to assume that I'm straight because I was born a woman, which is wildly frustrating.
I find that really interesting as well, because, like, I've noticed that as well, and you see, you know, tweets about people talking about straight girls at the gay bars, and I'm like, well, you're making a massive assumption there, and based on what? This is a gay bar, or this is a drag queen. Like, why would the automatic assumption be that that's a straight woman? Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's bizarre.
Just forget that it could even be a possibility. Like, we exist. We're valid.
100%. And on a, like, more positive note, who should we be uplifting? Like, what other queer women on the scene are inspiring you?
So I have a lot of respect for Holstar. Holstar's been doing it, I believe, for 18 years. So, you know, as much as we're celebrating the success of me being the first cis woman on Drag Race, which is great, but, you know, I did not invent this art for women doing drag. Holstar's been around an excellent amount of time and has an excellent career. I'm not the first and I won't be the last. So Holstar's incredible. TT Bang also made a massive splash being on Drag SOS, and that was incredible. That's probably the first time really in British mainstream TV we've had, like, a cis woman portrayed in drag. And I probably wouldn't be sat here now if it wasn't for TT. So, you know, I'm here now, but I didn't pave the way for me. Other people paved the way for me, and hopefully I'll be paving the way for the next generation.
I think, I wonder if as well, like, the sort of Sync the Pink collective has been really, because there's such a mix of different performers in that, and obviously Amy Zing as a woman at the helm of it has got to have an impact as well in making it that inclusive space.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Oh, I have a lot of friends that are involved in Sync the Pink, but I know they're mostly London based, aren't they? So I miss out on some here in Cardiff, but you know, I'm trying to get the Cardiff scene more diverse and more juicy and lovely.
Yeah, so tell me about the Cardiff scene, because you're not Welsh.
Correct, yes. I was originally born in Portsmouth, but Victoria is very much born and bred Cardiff scene, raised by Welsh drag queens and shown the ropes and got the comedy and the warbling voice. I mean, you know, more diversity could never be a bad thing. So more diversity would be lovely, but they definitely took me under their wing. One might assume that the older drag queens of Cardiff would sort of turn their nose up at me arriving on the scene in all fresh face, wanting a career in drag, but they didn't. Once they saw what I could do and saw how much I was putting work into it and doing all these competitions, they could see that I am, you know, just like them, I'm a character. Victoria is a caricature of a woman. She's not a real woman. and how much of an entertainer I am. And, you know, we're all doing the same thing. We're all putting on a show. We're there to entertain the masses. As much as I love talking politics and talking about political things, and my existence on the show is political, I don't talk about politics at all in my drag. I get on stage and we're all going to have a party for an hour and a half. You know, like, that's what I love about drag.
Yeah, 100%. And that's a tricky thing, isn't it? Because before we started talking, and I was thinking about, you know, what should I talk to Victoria about? And I was like, there's all this political stuff that I think is really important, and you've obviously got so much to say about it. But if that obscures what you do on stage, which is the fundamental at the end of the day, like, that the balance is out of whack. So yeah, as a trained theatrical performer, like, what can we expect to see on Drag Race? Have we got high kicks? Have we got multiple octaves? Like, what are you going to hit us with?
Absolutely. Well, yes, I am a trained singer, so you'll be expecting all the warbling tones of me. But do you know what? The whole cast is so talented this year, I've got to say. I think everyone has had some form of musical theatre or dance training or singing training. I'm going to say everyone has had some sort of training, yes. It is very talented, very theatrical. I'm very excited for everyone to see it.
Amazing. I feel like that was something that before Drag Race came to the UK, everyone said about British drag, is that, you know, it was less about lip syncing and more about singing and how well trained people were. So that's really cool that gets kind of showcased.
Yeah, because that's what I love about British drag, is the live singing and, you know, being able to hold a crowd in the palm of your hand for hours on end and build a rapport with the audience. And that's what I love about drag. I respect lip syncers, of course. I expect respect the craft and the concept, and to have a whole, you know, 10-minute number on this one concept and have a whole costume dedicated to this one number, I totally respect it. But as far as my performance, I like to stand up and warble for a few hours.
Did you feel like you had to sort of prepare or rehearse for the lip sync element?
I think my training would have served me very well. I'm a trained professional, so
of course, yes. Any challenge thrown your way.
Yeah, absolutely. I was very prepared for everything, and I was excited for everything that they were going to throw at me.
Yeah, what was it like? Because it must be surreal at this stage to sort of walk into the workroom, walk onto the main stage and see, you know, Rue and Michelle and Alan and Graham. How did that feel?
Well, I was, as I said, I was very prepared. It does feel a bit sort of out of body experience. But I was very prepared and it felt very right. It felt like I was in the right place at the right time.
What's next for Victoria's Gone? Like, what's in the future?
When I'm going on tour again, so we're doing like a Halloween tour with some amazing drag queens and drag kings, and that's going to be around Halloween time. Hopefully going to be doing like more of a personal show, a bit of a one-woman show, but I want to be able to take drag kings with me, more diverse performers, non-binary performers, trans performers, people of colour, people that are just basically not represented enough in the UK. So it's going to be a very gorgeous plethora of drag kind of show. But for the long run, I mean, the dream for me is to be an evil queen in a panto, like I've said before. That is the dream. Actually, the bigger dream is probably to get on Strictly. That's what I really want to do.
Amazing. That feels like a step that's got to be coming. That's got to be down the line. How do you think, you know, sharing a bill, kings and queens, like, how do you, when you're putting a show together, sort of take that into account and plan that in?
Absolutely. Well, I'm a relatively novice for putting a show together myself, so I'm sort of on the other side of it. I would usually try and get booked, and but now I'm able to have more creative control of a cast. I think it's only a natural progression to have kings and queens together. It just brings more diversity. As I said, I do that kind of traditional drag. So why would you want to see like six people doing the same thing in a show? You would want something, you want a juicy lineup. You want to see something different, each person doing a different thing, wearing a different type of outfit, having a different style. Your evening will be far much more entertaining watching a show like that than, you know, six of me screaming away.
Amazing. I feel like the one thing that people need to realise that I didn't really clock until I went to Bi Pride the other year, which was full of drag kings. And I was just like, boy bands, drag boy bands, why have I not realized this is a thing before? And it's amazing.
know. Yeah, where should I be? That's a good shout, actually. I'm going to write that down.
Yeah, brilliant. Well, I feel like I've learned everything about you from A to Z in 20 minutes flat. You're clearly a pro at the end of this day of press. Well, in that case, it's time for my final question, which is to nominate another Dorothy. So this could be someone you know, it could be an icon, or it could even be someone historical that I profile, but someone else who should get their own episode of the Dorothy Project.
I would have to say someone that I find very inspiring and also very attractive, Lucy Spraggan. I don't know if you've done that before.
I haven't.
Hey, I think that would be amazing. I think they've got a great story to tell. She's gorgeous, talented. I love Lucy Spraggan. Please do.
And at every single Pride, there's Lucy Spraggan. So I feel like that's a big part of British queer culture. Wouldn't great recommendation. Yeah. No. All right. Well, that was wonderful. Thank you so much for your time. And I absolutely can't wait to see you on the show.
I am absolutely rooting for Victoria, and I should say for Theresa May, and I cannot wait to see how she gets on. That's it from us for now, but we will be back for season 3, properly. We'll be announcing the date on Twitter, so don't risk missing it. Give us a follow at @Dorothy_podcast. As ever, don't forget to tweet us and let us know what you thought of the episode, and which Dorothy you think I should talk to next.